This is Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us on the radio waves here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. 855-450-3733. We've got Skype. Our Skype username is lrn.fm. With you tonight in studio, it's Ian.
Daryl.
So, Dr. Mary Ruart has hit the news recently. Dr. Ruart, we've had on this show in the past a couple of times. Great author, the author of one of my favorite libertarian books, that would be Healing Our World. And you can read the old 90s edition online for free, but there have been like four rewrites since then, or three or four rewrites, and it's still an excellent book.
They're on a
book.
Fourth edition, yeah. Which would be three rewrites.
Right. So I just didn't keep track of how many rewrites there were, but she's been updating the book over time with new information and
Yes. You
know, new chapters. Great libertarian communicator, one of my favorites, because she really comes at the libertarian position, which is the belief in the non-aggression principle, which says that you don't support or advocate the initiation of force to achieve political or social goals, in a nutshell. And she's great at communicating those ideas, I think, more so to liberals, because she comes at it from a compassionate perspective. That's not to say that conservatives aren't compassionate people or can't be compassionate people. It's just that the way that she talks sort of frames the issues, frames the libertarian position as the most compassionate one, rather than framing it from the perspective of, oh, well, you'll save all this tax money if you lower the government, right?
Right.
Like, there's a certain way to talk to somebody who's a conservative that's probably going to be more effective than how you talk to somebody who's a liberal. And Ruart has always been good at
even the more conservative people who talk about wanting to save tax money are then all of a sudden fine with spending, millions upon millions of dollars for certain pet projects that they like. The drug war, the war on terror, you name it, they're fine with spending money on it. They don't care about the financials. They just like to give lip service to save money here.
Well, conservatives aren't libertarians. I mean, despite the press that might want to make it sound like libertarians or conservatives
right,
who smoke pot.
Ronald Reagan said that thing that time where he used conservative and libertarian in the same sentence.
Well, it's more than that, though. I mean, you've got people like Bob Barr, you've got Gary Johnson, these Republicans who recently have gotten the libertarian nominations as of 2008, 2012, and 2016's presidential elections. That has done a lot, I think, to muddy the waters as far as what people might believe about libertarianism and what it means to be one.
True. And, Wayne Allyn Root back in like 2008 and 2010 was quoting Ronald Reagan when he said that thing that time with conservative and libertarian in the same sentence to basically say, see, this means we're conservatives.
It's ridiculous. So that's what I really like about Dr. Ruart. She's a former biomedical researcher, according to Salon.com, which is where she popped up just a couple of days ago. She came very close to being the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee in 2008. She was the one who was the biggest competitor against Bob Barr, and it
yes.
was a close nomination, if I'm recalling correctly. I don't recall the exact percentages, but she was, within striking distance. Unfortunately, it did go to Bob Barr, and that guy is a political hack from Georgia who ultimately is a Republican who I believe has since rejoined the Republican Party.
Yes.
Gary Johnson, the Libertarian nominee in 2016, garnered a high-profile endorsement by the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune and polled relatively high for a third-party candidate during his campaign. Along with the growing public support for third parties, at least in theory, it's worth keeping an eye on likely future candidates from outside of the Republican and Democratic parties. Ruart appeared on Salon Talks for a wide-ranging conversation this week where we discussed race, the war on drugs, libertarian philosophy, and abortion, the left-wing criticisms of her party's economic philosophy, and whether or not she'll run for office in 2020. We're going to share some of Ruart's answers to these questions here in moments, because that's one of the things she's really good at. She wrote a book about it. I think it's called Short Answers to Tough Questions.
Yes.
Something like that. Great little book to keep on the bathroom shelf and refer to and kind of get some good ideas on how to answer objections to libertarianism and address very specific issues that people are going to bring up.
And on the sixth ballot, six ballots.
That's a lot of ballots.
Mary Ruart wound up losing by 48 votes.
Oh, man. What a shame. God.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to your calls and thoughts. We'll get into a little bit more about Dr. Mary Ruart here in moments. We've got Tom in New Hampshire. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, it's about that Baltimore cop that had the video, the body camera, turned it on and forgot that it had all automatically recorded the preceding 30 seconds of it, and where the cop was seen planting the evidence before finding it.
Ooh.
Okay. And, oh, you didn't hear about that one?
No.
I saw a headline on the thing, but I didn't actually watch the video or read a story.
Well, always remember what I've mentioned to you in one of my word traps. What percentage of the victims of drug asset forfeiture over the years have been innocent victims? And, of course, all of them are innocent. Okay? So just because they're planting evidence doesn't make it any worse than when they're going out and busting real drug dealers
sure.
who are every bit as innocent as the ones who just had an attitude that didn't pass inspection.
Yep.
And the other point that I want to bring up right now, it was recently announced that the CIA will no longer be clandestinely supplying help to Syrian rebels who are trying to overthrow Assad. Okay, this is one of the things that Trump and Vladimir Putin have worked on. This is one of the things that Vlad doesn't like because, of course, his country is supporting the opposite side. They're trying, you know. And
now, Tom, you are aware. Hold on. You are aware that they actually suspended that program back in February, but 2 days ago they announced that they would not be reviving the program that they suspended. But some of the headlines are, oh, look what they just stopped doing today, that they stopped doing back in February. And also, the vast majority of the arms that were being given to these quote-unquote rebels were finding their way into the hands of Al-Qaeda, and the rebels were fighting one another. They weren't actually fighting either the Islamic State or the Assad government. They were fighting each other.
Let me point something out here that, you know, this is one of the things that Vladimir Putin is glad about, and that Donald Trump, of course, owns a lot of property in Russia that the Russian government could confiscate. And Vlad probably has a lot of dirt on Donald Trump, who is trying to stop the investigation from focusing on his family's finances. You know, they might have bank accounts in Russia that the U.S. investigators cannot find out about without the help of the Russian government. And so now it seems to me that we have a president who could be blackmailed by a foreign president.
He could be blackmailed by all kinds of people.
But
I mean, as long as there are skeletons in his closet, there are a good chance that, you know, there's a good chance that some people know about those skeletons and could blackmail him, whether it's the Russian government or the Iranian government or some competitor in Vegas or New York or whatever.
So I just wanted to point that out so that everybody realized that point, too. Okay.
So all right. There's nothing new there. Thank you for the call, Tom. I mean, what president doesn't have skeletons in their closet? What politician generally, I mean, with the exception of like Ron Paul, who's basically a Boy Scout, but like what percentage of them, you know, can be blackmailed? Probably most all of them.
Right. And so, again, the program was suspended in February, and the vast majority of the weapons that were given to these rebels were finding their way into the hands of Al-Qaeda, and the rebels weren't even fighting against the Syrian government. They were fighting each other.
The toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE like freedom. Sounds like the Libertarian Party. 855-450-3733.
We're not getting weapons from the CIA that I'm aware of.
No, but fighting each other. Libertarians are great at doing that. More coming up here in moments. You can share your thoughts. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. We'll be right back. This is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up anything you want. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and the Skype username here is lrn.fm, so feel free to connect with us there. And you'll sound, in some cases, like you're almost sitting in the studio with us here. It's Ian and Daryl in our beautiful Keene, New Hampshire studios, as we were talking a little bit about Dr. Mary Ruard, who has appeared on Salon.com kind of out of nowhere. And what a pleasant surprise to see Dr. Ruard fielding some questions in what appears to be about a 17-minute long video. They did not transcribe the entire thing, but I did find the part of the video where she mentions that, or she's asked the question about whether or not she'll be running for president for the nomination for the Libertarian ticket in 2020, and she says she's been contacted about it, but that she has not yet made a decision. So, as the host put it, that's a definite maybe. So, hopefully we'll see Dr. Ruart running. Now, Daryl, you ran for president. We'll give a couple of her answers to right. some of the questions here in a moment. But you ran for the nod by the Libertarian Party in 2016.
Correct.
And you were probably the most principled of candidates, basically the Dr. Ruart of the stage up there. Would you be throwing your weight behind Dr. Ruard if she decided to throw her hat into the ring?
Definitely. And I actually, before the 2016 campaign began, she was, I think, the keynote speaker to the NHLA dinner in 2015.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I saw her there, and I asked if she would run in 2016, because I would have dropped out and thrown my weight to her last year.
Right.
So, yes, if she throws in, she's got my full support.
Good. So, first issue here that Salon transcribed from the video, and we'll put the full link on our Facebook and Twitter so you can check it out later. On what libertarians can do, the question was regarding what libertarians can do to reach out to people of color, especially around the war on drugs and mass incarceration. And Ruart said, well, whenever we have the regulations or laws that appear colorblind but actually target the poor, as really the war on drugs do, you actually have what is essentially de facto racial discrimination, and that's what's happening here. So as a libertarian, my message to people of color is, hey, you're being discriminated against, but not the way you think. Minimum wage laws, licensing laws, the war on drugs, they all target you, even though on the surface they look racially neutral. And that is something that, you know, she certainly gets into in her book, Healing Our World, how minimum wage laws, for instance, which we're seeing publicized in places like Seattle and California and elsewhere, that these minimum wage laws actually hurt the very people that they are intended to help.
Right. And I'm sure you've seen some of the stories about what is going on in Seattle. To where
the $15,
even though it's not yet $215,
right? They started, you know, at $13 or
something.
They're
doing this, you know, staggered stage up to $15, but you have people that have requested fewer hours because, oh, well, now I'm not getting this benefit or that benefit. So even though the minimum wage has increased, the average part-time worker has seen like a $125 decrease in their salary.
As far as what it'll buy, you mean?
No, as in what they take home, because
they're
working fewer hours. They're getting paid more.
Yeah, okay.
But they're working fewer hours. So it wound up decreasing their pay.
It screwed them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, as it usually does, the poorest people end up getting their jobs either cut entirely or cut down, as you're pointing out, because the companies can only cut down the quality of the product so much. I mean, if you're already selling bottom-of-the-barrel fast food as far as quality food is concerned, then, you know, you really can't get much more bottom-of-the-barrel.
Right.
So you can't cut costs in anywhere but personnel
right.
at that point.
Anyway. So you either lay off workers or you cut hours or both.
Yep.
You wind up, oh, you know what? We used to run with four guys in the kitchen. Now we're doing it with three.
And she mentions licensing laws here as well. Again, those also target poor people, which of course ends up, you know, disproportionately targeting blacks and other minorities. But licensing laws keep people from advancing by doing their own thing. Like, great example of this would be the hair braiding. Here in New Hampshire. Just this year, it was legalized to hair braid without a government license.
Right. And I definitely think that Dr. Ruart should get the credit for doing that, even though she never came to New Hampshire to testify on that bill.
Mm-hmm.
But it was her book, Healing Our World, where I first read about these hair braiding laws. And then a couple of years ago, you had groups like the Institute for Justice really start pushing to repeal these things. And you've got to wonder, would IJ or other groups be pushing for this had it not been written about in her book?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I guess you'd have to talk to whoever at IJ, the Institute for Justice, and find out if they were influenced by Dr. Mary Ruart's book back in the day. I mean, it started back in the book came out in the 1990s originally, so it's been around for a number of decades at this point.
Right, but you know, there was what, like the second or third edition came out in the late aughts, maybe right around 2010, and it was right after that when you really started seeing the push to try to get rid of these hair braiding licenses, which is why, you know, I'm going to give her credit.
All right. All right. I mean, I'm sure she played a role in that. Obviously, I would think that some also who might have contacted the Institute for Justice who've had themselves oppressed by these hair braiding licensing laws that had for many, probably years, I don't know how many decades in different states, had required hair braiders who don't have to use any kind of, you know, sharp knives or scissors or the, you know, crazy chemicals that are supposedly the reason why, like, most hairstyling licenses exist. That, you know, they don't even have any of that with hair braiding.
Well, not only that, but if you go to a beautician school or you go to the cosmetology school or you go to barber college, there's one thing they do not teach you, and that is hair braiding. But, you know, these bureaucrats.
Or they don't teach you
regulators.
African hair braiding. They might teach you how to do, like, you know, the regular white girl braid with the three strands that you kind of braid
probably
around.
Not even that. But, you know, they're not teaching this specific thing that some regulator is saying, no. You've got to go to barber college to learn how to do this
where
thing.
You have to go to 1,000 hours or whatever. In different states, I'm sure it's different. But I think here it was like 1,000 hours of training.
Closer to 1,500.
That never actually touches on the, you know, the issue at hand. So you've spent all this time and money getting this this license, this government permission slip. And ultimately, it did not do anything to benefit your education because that's not what you wanted to do. You didn't want to be a beautician. You wanted to do African hair braiding. And it was specifically African hair braiding that was talked about because I was at the full hearing for this thing. I recorded it.
Right.
It's on freekeen.com. It's actually on the Freekeen YouTube channel. So if you want, you can watch and listen to these ladies come up and talk about their experiences in trying to, like, exist and do this business, this thing that they learned from their mothers, who learned it from their mothers and so on, to, you know, do that as their business. But also, you know, they can't really do it legally very easily, so some of them were doing it underground. And, you know, they came out and they told their story, and it was really interesting. So it's there for you. I'm sure you can just search the Freekeen YouTube channel for hair braiding, would be my guess, and it'd probably come up. Toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. And you can take control of the airwaves. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. Also, Skype username is lrn.fm. This is Free Talk Live.
You probably heard about Bitcoin and virtual currencies, but you don't really know what to do next. Maybe you feel like they've already passed you by. Nothing could be further from the truth. Bitcoin is an emergent technology still. It's still in beta, and it's sweeping the globe. All the information that you need to learn about Bitcoin is at Bitcoin.com. Go to your browser, type in Bitcoin.com, choose a wallet program, get Bitcoins, and then spend Bitcoins. Bitcoin.com, the only site you need to know for virtual currencies. Bitcoin.com.
It's Free Talk Live. We invite you to join us on the radio waves here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. Tonight with you, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
And you don't need money to do business on Simbi.com. It's a slick and easy-to-use marketplace where you can trade your talents for other people's services and abilities. You can forget the old economy. This is your economy. Simbi.com. You won't believe the diversity of the services available on Simbi.com. Hundreds of thousands of people are acting within the symbiotic economy. So go get your account at Simbi.com. Simbi.com. Take a look around and post your services. Simbi.com. As we go to Tom, we talk more about Dr. Mary Ruard and her interview on Salon.com in moments as a potential future candidate for the Libertarian Party nationally in 2020. Tom, you're calling from the West Coast. Was it Oregon? Where are you calling from?
Northern California.
North California, that's right.
Hopefully to be a new state here in Northern California.
Yeah. Now, so you're part of the Jefferson movement, right? The state of Jefferson?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of water under the bridge since the last time we spoke.
All right.
And I am now actually chairman of a movement that came out of the Jefferson movement.
Tell me about that.
And, you know, before we get into that, I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
Are you familiar with startup societies, and are you planning on attending the summit in San Francisco next month?
So I'll answer the first question first. Yes, I am familiar with the Startup Society group. I went to the summit that they had in Portsmouth last year.
Right.
I will not, however, be attending the thing in San Francisco.
Yeah, I also do not plan to be there. I didn't even know about it. What is it?
Well, it's a group of people that are looking for ways to start up new societies, special economic zones. I will be going to the one in San Francisco, and I'll be speaking at the one in San Francisco on Saturday afternoon.
Cool. So what is it that you're going to be talking about there?
Well, we have formed a new organization that came out of the old Jefferson movement. The update on the Jefferson movement is that they have filed a lawsuit in federal court. And unfortunately, they came out and campaigned on smaller government. And then they brought a lawsuit that, if it's successful, will bring much larger government. In the way of wanting to up our legislator count here in California from basically 120 to 12,000 legislators.
What?
Yes, sir.
Hold on. So the proposal of the state of Jefferson people was to increase the number of legislators in California to 12,000?
Correct. There is a lawsuit filed by the SOJ 51 group to bring the number of legislators up. They're claiming a lack of representation. And
to get them to, if they succeed, which they aren't going to, but if they succeed with that lawsuit and get 12,000 state representatives created, the theory would be that then they'd finally have fair representation and they wouldn't have to break away, or that they then would be able to break away.
I think it's they would get the fair representation so that they could, because in order to break away, you need permission of the entity you are breaking away from.
That is correct, but they're after more representation. We still have the problem. The basic problem here in Northern California is that the top third of California only has 6 legislators in Sacramento. Los Angeles County alone has 34.
Wow.
So we really have no effective say because of a court case called Reynolds versus Sims.
And presumably they wouldn't want to let you just break away because the state gets a lot of water from the north part, right?
That's one of the issues, but whether we break away or not, the water's under contract. So, the new entity has to honor the contract.
I see.
So last fall, we had a big meeting. We had, over 500 people gather.
Wow.
It was awesome. And we formed committees in the beginnings of trying to, get more organized with the state. And at that meeting, one of the committees that was formed was an executive committee to oversee the direction and governance of the new state. And I happened to be the one out in the audience that asked for the executive committee, and the rules of the game were we have easel paper. We'll sign up our name on the easel paper. If you're interested in being chair, circle your name. I signed the easel paper, circled my name, And I was informed 3 days later that, they decided to disband the executive committee and that it wasn't needed. Okay. And my response was, well, gentlemen, you had the consent of over 500 people to form the executive committee, and now you're trying to disband it behind people's back without their consent. So I do not recognize your authority to do so, and we will continue forward with this executive committee. So
schism.
We continued. Schism. Yes. Well, you know, unfortunately, it's like so many movements. You know, you get that initial burst of success, and the people that started it want to hang on tight and not want to take it to the next level. So we met, we gathered, we created a charter that is the foundational document for who we are and what we're about.
So who are you?
So we are now the New State Movement.
The New State Movement.
New State Movement, yes, sir.
Okay.
And the New State Movement is a chartered organization. We have 6 counties that have ratified the charter so far. And so we are moving.
Now, when you say you have counties that have ratified it, does that mean that people in those counties have ratified it, or that some official government bureaucrat has ratified it?
People have ratified it.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. We will be going before boards of supervisors and things like that with the document. But
now, is this still expected to just be the northern 6 counties or whatever of California, or is it also going to include some of southern Oregon? What's the geography proposed here?
That's under discussion. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, I will be having a discussion tomorrow with people in Southern California about either 1 or 2 new states, all the way from the Oregon border to the Mexico border.
Hold up. So wait a minute. So
this
you're talking
very big.
Okay, so you're talking about the this state could extend all the way down what, the east side of California, because isn't that where the kind of the more red state folks are?
May well be 2 states.
Uh-huh. Huh.
So we are under negotiations with other people that want to join.
Splitting California, what's currently California, you're talking about creating 2 new states out of that and still having something that would be California?
So 3 states?
So
yep.
3 states?
3 states, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, or maybe 4. Depends on what really makes sense.
All right. And that would all be encompassed in the New State Movement that you're talking about?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The number one issue is to get the consent of the legislature to form a new state. So really, realistically, the more counties we have on board, the more legislators that have constituency that's involved.
I see.
So the more clout we have within the state legislature.
So how brand new is this new state movement? Like, when did you guys settle on
December.
This?
December was our first meeting.
Okay. All right. Where does one go to learn more about it?
Newstateccr.org. That is newstateccr.org.
All right, so obviously you're interested in having people from California check in with you and possibly sign on to sort of represent their area. Is that the idea?
Yeah, the way we're doing this is we're starting committees in counties that are interested in participating in this. So functionally, it simply looks like you get a group together, hopefully, you know, 20, 30 people, maybe more. Mm-hmm. You hold a town hall. You decide to create a committee out of the town hall. You elect a chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer, and then you elect a representative to the CCR and 2 alternates. So,
and then at some point, you guys will probably put something together, go to the state legislators, and ask them to put something forward, I would imagine, right?
Well, we might even elect our own senators.
All right. I want to hear more as this develops, Tom. Thanks for the call tonight. Newstateccr.org is their website. Good luck with the recruiting.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And they're not the only secession movement there in California, which is interesting. More coming up. Free Talk Live, inviting you to join us here on the radio waves. Our number here is 855-450-FREE. Like freedom, 855-450-3733. We're talking about secession. We can talk more about a future potential presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party, Dr. Mary Ruart, a little bit later. But we got off onto the secession topic because Tom, who's been an occasional caller here to kind of update us on what's been going on with the State of Jefferson, as it is popularly known. Apparently, the State of Jefferson, which originally, as I understood it, was mixed between the Northern California counties and some of Southern Oregon.
Correct.
And there have been people who have been supporting that area seceding into a new state from California and Oregon, respectively. For quite a while, and Tom was involved. Yeah, he was involved in that movement, and apparently there's been a schism within that movement recently, which, of course, shouldn't surprise anyone, given that that's just sort of the way of things when it comes to movements. Seems like when a movement grows larger than about 30 people, the likelihood of a schism starts to dramatically escalate with each new person that gets involved, and 30 may be a little bit of a high number. But, so it's interesting to hear about all of what's going on out there, which states have the most exciting secession movements. And you got to admit, California, especially ever since Trump got elected, has really kind of shown itself as one of the leading areas for secession movements. There are multiple competing secession movements in California. So now you've got the State of Jefferson, which we already knew about them. We just found out about the schism from that, which resulted in New State CCR, the website newstateccr.org, and that's who Tom, who was on the phone with us, was the chairman of. So you've got sort of that's, I don't know if you want to call them right wing, but let's call them the maybe smaller government groups. There's also a group that wants to see California secede from the United States and be its own country.
Yes.
Which I have to say that I am much more interested in seeing that happen, but I support secession across the board. So I'd love to see all of these things succeed at seceding. And the other group, the much larger group, or at least you get the sensation that they're larger, at least from the media coverage they're being given and from the funding that is likely, from what we understand, behind what is now called the California Freedom Coalition. Listeners of this show may recall Yes California was the previous big campaign for secession that started to get a lot of news coverage after the Trump election, or right at around the time that Trump was elected. But they had existed prior to that. So there was a lot of news coverage that sort of centered on Yes California as though this was somehow spurred by the Trump election.
Right.
But that's not true. They were working to collect petition signatures or organize prior to Trump's election. But regardless, they did get an explosion in press coverage after the fact. So it certainly didn't hurt them that Trump was elected as far as their coverage was concerned.
Correct.
What ended up hurting them was sometime this year, the organizer, the prime mover behind Yes California, decided he was going to call it quits on this whole petition drive secession thing and apparently moved to Russia. So once that happened, the whole thing, because sometimes movements unfortunately rely on the actions of one person more so than they should.
Right.
And this person, you know, once they decided they were going to move to Russia, the rest of the Yes California thing, the petition drive, just kind of crumbled. And they formed instead this new thing, the California Freedom Coalition, which is, in my opinion, a better name than Yes California. It is more communicative of what it is that they're looking for. And according to LAWeekly.com, they are back in the news. This was as of just a couple of weeks ago. The coalition, or the California Freedom Coalition, the CFC, is making the point that California is getting the short end of the stick when it comes to federal representation and to the tax dollars it sends to Washington, D.C., according to a recent report by the CFC, which is the Calexit Movement to Secede from the United States. And it's interesting, their complaint is very similar to the complaint of the State of Jefferson or the other folks, the New State Movement, that their representation isn't good. Right. So for the Northern California people, they're saying, well, compared to Los Angeles or San Francisco, you know, we don't get jack squat for representation in the state house. But the other folks, the California Freedom Coalition, are saying, well, at the national level, we in California do not get fair representation in the U.S. Senate is what they are saying. So, again, same argument, just sort of different scales as far as, you know, what they're talking about.
Right. And also, you know, they're talking not only different scales, but completely different chambers of the legislature.
Right.
So the U.S. Senate, and let me sort of break this down for people that might not realize the U.S. Senate, each state gets two U.S. senators.
That's right.
That's written into the Constitution, you know, whether you like the document or not, each state, regardless of population, gets two U.S. senators.
Correct. So there's 100 of them.
Currently.
Yeah.
If, you know, there's another state, then there would be 102. If there's
Correct.
One fewer state, there would be 98. So, two. The House of Representatives is supposed to be based on population, and originally, you know, there was this calculation of a certain number until this, and then it winds up being based off of this population and mm-hmm. blah, 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 but sometime in like the early 1900s, it got capped at 435, and so they just, you know, do the math. So California has a lot more representatives than all of the other states.
That's true. But they're not talking about that.
Right.
Yeah.
But the state of Jefferson people, they're talking about the California State House.
Correct.
They have less representation in the California State House than a much more populated area like San Francisco Metro or
right.
LA Metro.
Which is typical for states where there are these, you know, high concentration metro populations that throw off essentially the
right.
Sort of the balance.
Here
in
New Hampshire, we've got this big, huge, giant landmass called Coos County.
Yeah.
That has, what, like 12, 13 state reps total for the entirety of that giant county.
But there's also like 30,000 people up there, too.
And, you know, there's probably a couple more than 30,000, but.
Okay.
You know, you've got Manchester, that city itself has a lot more, like three or four times as many state reps than the entirety of this big, huge, giant county. But you don't see, and I've certainly not heard, you know, people that live in Coos County saying, we need more representation because we've got a larger landmass than Manchester.
I have heard that the North Country people would like to secede into their own state.
I've not heard that.
I've heard rumblings about that. I can't say there's any kind of organization to it. But they, you know, the folks that live up there, they're an even more hardy bunch. There aren't very many of them. And according to Wikipedia, the population is just a smidge over 30,000, Daryl. It's 31,212 as of 2015.
Okay.
In the whole county.
I thought it was closer to 35, but.
All 1,830 square miles of Coos County. I mean, it's a huge chunk of New
right.
Hampshire. And folks up there, you know, they feel like things are different up there in the north of
right.
the Notches.
And, you know, some of the people that live north of the Notches will call anybody south of the Notches a flatlander.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we discussed the elevation difference. It's only 400 foot elevation difference between Keene and Lancaster,
which is in the north. Yeah. So, you know, I love seeing all these secession movements because they get people talking and they get people talking about the idea of decentralization of power, the ideas and the benefits of secession, declaring independence. Now, obviously, I support independence on the individual level. I don't believe in the idea of states. I think they're a dangerous idea and we need to get rid of them. But unfortunately, as long as people believe in the idea of the state, then we have to keep, you know, working within it to try to change things.
Right.
And secession is one way that we can do that. So the CFC, they've embarked on a campaign, the Education Funds Taxation Without Representation Project, to educate Golden State residents about their political and fiscal relationship to the rest of the nation. The latest salvo was unleashed recently when the campaign released an analysis of California's representational power in the United States Senate. It includes a map, which they include here in this article, that shows what they call the representation in the U.S. Senate based on the size of the state. So because each state gets two senators, the states that are biggest on this map are like New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, you know, that the smaller states get the largest physical representation, while California is shrunk down to a very, very tiny representation to kind of visualize for people the proportionality, if you will, by land mass to how many state senators or how many U.S. senators state receives. So If it persuades people to learn more about secession, I think that is wonderful. We're going to continue here with more on their report out of Calexit. And apparently there's now a Calexit comic book. Did you see that, Daryl?
I did not.
Yep, they've got their own comic book, which is awesome. So I think it's wonderful. The more secession talk we can have happening nationwide, the better, so that we can end the idea of the nation.
Dash is digital cash, a digital currency designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy, fees are low, and transactions are confirmed instantly. Pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Dash is the first digital money that's governed by its users. Join Dash and help us build a better financial system for everyone. Find out more at dash.org. That's dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, and we'll take your calls about anything you want to discuss. If you dial in toll-free to join us, you can do that at 855-450-FREE, like freedom. 855-450-3733, or you can Skype into the show at Skype username lrn.fm. We're talking about Calexit. It is back in the news, at least out in California, where LAWeekly.com is reporting on a new report issued by the California Freedom Coalition. Now, for those just tuning in, California Freedom Coalition is the rebranding, or the relaunching, if you will, of the now failed, sadly failed, Yes California campaign that had garnered itself a lot of press coverage toward the end of 2016 and a little bit into 2017 about their goal to gather hundreds of thousands of petition signatures to get Californians to vote on whether or not they should, I think they were voting on whether or not they should vote on seceding or
Correct.
Something like that. It's just some Byzantine political process that is, just ridiculously full of time-wasting activities.
Right, because, the way the, statutes and whatnot are written, they can't actually petition something onto the ballot of, should we secede? It's, should we have a vote on whether or not to secede?
Which in
So you're case, voting on whether or not to vote.
Right, to hold another vote. That's what they were working on, and then they abandoned that plan after the main organizer decided he was going to give up on this secession plan and moved to Russia. So since then, they formed the California Freedom Coalition and are at it again, planning more petitioning, collecting, and that sort of thing. But right now, they're doing some studies. And according to LAWeekly.com, their Taxation Without Representation project from this CFC group, the California Freedom Coalition, has released a map that shows the population of California, as far as relative to the what they show is the size of their state in a map of the United States, sort of this broken apart looking map where all the states are sort of shattered apart from one another and are disproportionately large based on the amount of population in that state. So states with small populations like Wyoming, New Hampshire, and Vermont are very, very large, and California, Texas, Florida, New York, very, very small in comparison to the rest of the states. And this is to show senatorial representation, because obviously it would look different if it were, the U.S. reps.
Correct.
Anyway, population growth in the Golden State, home to an estimated 39.2 million people, has stretched the base of California's two U.S. senators beyond what some experts believe is reasonable. But because it's the largest state, California's per-person Senate coverage is the smallest in America. Quote, the average Wyomingite gets 66 times as much representation as the average Californian. According to a statement from the CFC, voters in large states get an extremely raw deal. The disparity is intentional, part of the Founding Fathers' Great Compromise, in which each state would get two senators but would see House of Representative districts apportioned according to population. The idea was to protect rural populations from the potential tyranny of big states and cities. Wyoming has two senators, but only one House representative, while California has two senators and 53 House representatives. But the result, say analysts, is that states like California and Texas are often sold short when it comes to receiving government dollars and services. A 2014 analysis found that California got 94 cents back for every tax dollar sent to D.C., and that California ranked top or excuse me, among the top 14 states least dependent on the federal government for funding. So it almost sounds like they
want
more. That's
very surprising. One, it's surprising that California is what they call a donor state.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
But at the same time, you've got to think that, you know, the numbers are going to kind of be skewed because where do all of the movie stars live?
Hollywood.
Right. So that's going to increase a little bit artificially the amount of federal dollars sent to D.C. from California.
Because okay, but all the tech companies are also in California as well. I don't know if it's all the movie stars, but there's a lot of business in California.
My point is you've got a lot of, you know, really high paid people that increase the, you know, amount of federal dollars being sent from the state.
I see what you're saying.
That there's not a lot of movie stars that live in New Hampshire, even though New Hampshire also a donor state.
Right. And I suspect New Hampshire is more of a donor state. I don't know what the number is offhand, but they're saying here 94 cents back into California for every dollar spent. And so obviously the less you get back for the dollars, the more of a donor state you are. But it is interesting that California is a donor state because that's a motivator when they can point to that saying, hey, look, we're not even getting back the same amount of money that we send to these bureaucrats.
That's one of the things that, yes, California had in, I think they were calling it their blue paper.
Mm-hmm.
To where they were saying, look at all of the money that is being sent out of California that could stay here if we wound up being an independent country.
Now, we know that if the money stays in California and if they secede, it will likely become a more socialist place than it, you know, already is.
Correct.
That's likely what these people want, and that's
fine. Let them do it.
Yep. No, I understand.
Split away.
Well, there are some probably some people in California living on the northern or eastern side of the state that aren't so happy about that idea. Like, they wouldn't want to be saddled with that.
Okay, so secede from the California secession.
Indeed. Well, shouldn't they allow that? If California secedes and then the state of Jefferson people or the other competitors want to, you know, go their own separate way, presumably it would look really bad if the state of California just seceded, but then wouldn't let those counties secede, right? That would look pretty awful.
Right. It would, you know, reveal the hypocrisy, but
sure. And there probably
government
would be.
Officials are really good at being hypocritical.
Right.
So California should allow Jefferson gone.
I agree. Smaller states here, they say, again, are overrepresented. From LAweekly.com, smaller states overrepresented in Congress tend to lean conservative and Republican, and as big blue states like California grow, the power of smaller counterparts actually increases in contrast because budget legislation is dependent on Senate approval. It's something that got out of hand historically, said the director of research and policy at the CFC. Quote, not only is the makeup of the Senate terrible for Californians, it doesn't even benefit the average American. The map shows that lots of states' residents are overrepresented in the Senate, but those states compose less than 30% of the population, unquote. The solution, at least for the Calexit crowd, is simple. Leave the United States and enjoy the fruits of California. That is the world's sixth largest economy. Quote, giving California more autonomy would make our representation in the Senate less of a problem. Well, if you are seceding, then you wouldn't be in the Senate anymore, and that wouldn't be a problem at all.
Correct.
I fully support the CFC's efforts to get out, just like I support Texas and the Texas secessionist movements, of which I believe there are also a couple of competitors in that state as well. And, you know, every now and then we'll hear from one of those folks down in Texas to update
us. Yeah, I think there's the Texas Nationalist Movement, then there's the Republic of Texas, and those are different entities with different goals.
That's true. And I imagine they're kind of a little bit, you know, maybe it's a little tougher now to recruit with the Trump administration in, because the secession winds tend to blow harder whenever there's somebody in office who, you know, is not of the political party that tends to represent the secession
movement.
Right.
That's why the Californians are, you know, talking about secession now and they weren't doing it 8 years ago.
Well, they were doing it before Trump got in, the Yes California folks were, but it's certainly
true.
There's much louder chatter now, just as I suspect there's some quieter chatter in Texas, because they got a bunch of angry people to join after Obama was reelected in 2012, and there was that big hubbub about, you know, 100,000 people sending the message to Obama asking about secession in Texas, to which Obama's response was, this was settled during the Civil War.
Right. We killed people, so yeah. Therefore we're right.
Right. Suggesting that, you know, that would happen again. That was sort of the underlying message of that answer. And certainly an answer like that does not, you know, give people confidence in the idea of secession. It's the hardest, I would say the hardest thing to get over when you talk to people about secession as far as objections are concerned. Because all right. of sales, and that's what we're doing here, you know, the process of seceding is the process of selling people on the idea of secession and the idea that it is possible to do. And the big objection, of course, is, well, what if they start a violent thing? What if they roll in tanks? What if they start assassinating the leaders of the secession movement? What if the you know, federal government does X, Y, Z? We can address some of that coming up here in moments. And the Calexit comic book coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Hey, it's Free Talk Live. You, as always, can bring up anything that you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. With you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian.
And Daryl.
Of course, you can take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever you want. We're talking about secession at the moment. And if any state secedes, which hopefully we'll see that happen in the United States sometime, because it happens around the world fairly often. I mean, over the last 100 years or so, it's not an uncommon occurrence for states and countries to split and secede and, you know, change format, if you will. But in the United States, it hasn't happened yet, and hopefully it can happen. Hopefully it can happen in an affordable, or not affordable, but hopefully it can happen in a less dangerous manner than it, you know, than the last time around. States
yes.
tried that. Peaceful secession definitely seems to be the way to go. But one of the things that people are going to have to address once the state secedes, whichever state is the first, is what to do about money in that state. Will they create a central bank and issue state currency? Or will they just let the market decide what should happen with money? You know, maybe keep using the U.S. dollar or use cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. Now, if you want to learn more about Bitcoin, you ought to check out Bitcoin.com. It's your premier source for everything Bitcoin-related. You can get help buying Bitcoins or choosing a Bitcoin wallet. You can read the latest news or even engage with the community on the Bitcoin forum. Go to Bitcoin.com. And in addition to all of that, they also now have a Bitcoin mining pool. Actually, they've had it for a little while, but it's pretty slick the way they've set it up over at Bitcoin.com. You go to pool.bitcoin.com, and you can forget about the costs, the constant equipment upgrades and maintenance of having to do it yourself. You can make Bitcoin over at pool.bitcoin.com. Literally, you can mine it into existence, but you can actually have all the equipment somewhere else. The folks over at pool.bitcoin.com make that easy. I'm doing it. There's a 100% uptime guarantee, and the website is super easy to use over at pool.bitcoin.com. Not just that, but you also help steer Bitcoin towards the liberating currency.
You're not stealing
nope.
Bitcoin. That's ether that winds up getting stolen very easy because of flaws in these smart contracts.
Yeah, that's another issue. Satoshi Nakamoto, of course, meant it to be a liberating currency, and if you're getting behind pool.bitcoin.com, you're doing activism and possibly making some money while you sleep. That's pool.bitcoin.com. All right, so we were talking about California's potential exit from the United States, and they've got themselves a comic book now,
woohoo!
Which is pretty cool, because in order to spread whatever an idea it is we're talking about here on Free Talk Live, we like the ideas of liberty, we like the non-aggression principle, the idea that you should be free to live your life how you want, as long as you don't hurt anybody else. So we spread that idea, but it's an idea that needs to be spread in multiple ways. So we've kind of got the radio thing covered here pretty
right.
good on Free Talk Live. And we do a little bit of video with the in-cam studio or the in-studio cameras here that we have during the show, which you can see over at cam.freetalklive.com. Yeah, that's good, but we're not focusing on video. It's more of an afterthought here. But there are some other people out there who are doing some really great work around video, like Penn and Teller did with their famous or infamous TV show on the Showtime Network for 8 seasons called BS, which I can't say the full name on the radio for obvious reasons. But there's also, of course, John Stossel, who's done some great work on Fox and ABC News. And so there are really some talented folks out there who,
yes.
who are communicating the ideas of liberty in different media. And you know what? I just saw you or Mark holding on to a comic book here in the studio, Daryl, like a liberty-oriented comic book.
Yeah, it was done by Johnny Adams from the Johnny Rocket Launchpad. He sent
me, I didn't know he was a comic book artist.
He sent me several copies. And
that's so cool.
A couple of them signed.
Huh.
And you know
great
what?
Podcast.
Since you mentioned it, I still have a signed copy.
Oh, wow.
So let's do a giveaway.
You're going to give away a signed copy of a comic book?
I've already given away two of them.
Wow.
I've got a third signed copy, and I was not planning to do this.
No, you didn't tell me anything about this.
So let's do a giveaway.
Okay.
To where...
what's it called? The comic book.
Oh,
sorry. Not the giveaway. Liberty Force. Okay,
I think
superheroes who are like freedom-oriented.
Right.
Okay.
So let's have people send emails to... Daryl@freetalklive.com.
All right.
Daryl spelled D-A-R-R-Y-L. Mm-hmm. Put the subject line, I want the comic. And then we'll say within like 24 hours after the end of the show, so 10 o'clock tomorrow night, everybody that has sent an email, I'll do a random number generator and I'll wind up contacting the person to get an address.
That's pretty cool. And you're going to take care of the shipping and all that.
Yeah, it's like $2 to ship. Right.
Nice. Liberty Force, you said, is the name of the comic
series. I believe that's the name of the comic.
Okay. Is it still in the other room?
It's in the other room.
We can go and check that out. It looked
yeah,
cool.
I'll go check it out during the break.
Yeah, yeah. Great podcast, by the way, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad podcast. I didn't know that they also did comics. That's really cool. So email Daryl@freetalklive.com within the next 24 hours, which means if you're a podcast listener, hopefully you're listening within the next 24 hours.
And yes, it is Liberty. I just pulled up a picture because he's got the comic available at Freedom Fest that's happening this weekend in Vegas.
That. All right, cool.
Liberty Force comic.
Excellent. So that's important to have the ideas of liberty in different venues, in different forms of media. On the radio, on television, in comic, in print, because you know historically the liberty movement sort of been a book movement, a bunch of book nerds reading books. There's nothing wrong with books. You're a publisher, Daryl,
yes.
So you love books. I mean, I like books when I make the time to read them. But a lot of people are super busy, so it's easier to listen to an audio podcast or
audio books,
watch something on YouTube or audiobooks. And so having those different media efforts is important because you never know who you're going to reach with any given one of those in any moment. So we never know who's turning on the radio all across the country and hearing us on actual radio stations or discovering us on podcast or whatever. And so kudos to the Calexit movement, who now has a comic that has come out. It's called Calexit. And according to LAWeekly.com's Dennis Romero, imagine a future in which California secedes from the United States after a fascist president orders all immigrants to leave. The new comic book Calexit, expected to be one of the stars at the show of the San Diego Comic Con, which was very recently.
It's going on right now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, this was published Monday. I've got a friend that is there.
Takes its readers into a dystopian world that has strange parallels, many unintended, to today's political environment. Los Angeles-based creator Mateo Pizzolo said he and co-author Aman K. Nahuelpan started conceiving the story before President Trump was nominated, and that they were unaware of the real-life Calexit movement, manifesting in an initiative by a group called the California Freedom Coalition. One of the original organizers of Calexit, Marcus Ruiz Evans, said he doesn't know the term's history. Quote, no one knows who invented the term or made it the term to use. Well, I presume it came after Brexit.
Yes.
Which is, as I understood it, the first, suffix, the exit suffix was the...
British exit.
Right.
Brexit.
That was the first time I'd heard that, even though prior to Brexit there was that Scottish secession
movement.
But they
didn't call it Skexit.
No, they didn't, which is why I say it was the first I'd heard was Brexit. Then all of a sudden all these other things, NHXit, Calexit,
things. Scandals and Gate.
Right, yeah. 855-450-FREE, like freedom. You can join us here with your thoughts. Free Talk Live.
This is Riley Blake, producer of the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. In addition to the Digest, I host my own weekly podcast called Anarcho Agenda, providing you liberty-oriented content without all the statism. Subscribe to Anarcho Agenda on iTunes, Google Play, or visit anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's anarchoagenda.libsyn.com for further details.
Free Talk Live, you dial toll-free, bring up whatever you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
We have Skype as well. The Skype username is lrn.fm. Let's go back to the phones, do the fun. Larry, listening in Utah to KYAH. Hey, Larry. Larry in Utah? Larry going once. Larry in Utah going twice. Maybe there's a technical difficulty. We're going to put Larry on hold, see if we can
maybe get... Larry doesn't actually exist.
We will see about that. California, the landmass out there, may be its own state if one group gets its way. That's the California Freedom Coalition, which is the offshoot of the Yes Coalition, or Yes California, which was the original secession movement from 2016, or prior to the election on 2016. And we're talking about the... just sort of the media that's, that is required to get out there into people's heads. We've got some flyers here in New Hampshire created by the Foundation for New Hampshire Independence that we handed out recently during a baseball game, or just before a baseball game here in Keene. And others have done similar outreach across the state just to kind of tickle people about the idea of declaring independence, to put the idea into people's heads, give them some quick answers to some of the objections that are going to come up. So it's important to have different types of media so you can reach people at different times in different ways and start conversations up. And it's interesting that the Calexit people have their own comic book, and more interesting that the comic's creators named it Calexit without ever having heard about the Yes Coalition or the Yes California or these groups, the secessionist groups.
That's well, what's really interesting, I've got an article from comicbook.com. Apparently, the proceeds of this are going to a super PAC called Become the Government.
The proceeds from the comic book?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're going to wind up giving support to... according to comicbook.com, first-time candidates from nonpartisan backgrounds in the 2018 midterm elections.
Huh. So anybody who's a newbie to politics will get support from this group?
Presumably.
First-time candidates.
First-time
so
candidates.
They've run before, they won't
quote,
get
quote, from nonpartisan backgrounds. So yep. If you've been somebody that's, you know, been a county chair of your Republican
but
party,
but
you've
I
never
see.
Been a candidate,
you'd be excluded.
Then presumably you would be excluded.
Okay, that is interesting.
Now, the question is, are they going to try to help people wind up getting on the ballot? Mm-hmm. And because California's got this horrible top two system to where only the top two candidates out of the primary wind up being on the general ballot, then, you know, do they even know that that exists? Do they realize that the chances that any of the candidates they support even getting on the general election ballot, you know, not even thinking about getting elected to Congress, but just, you know, getting on the general election ballot is going to be an uphill battle mm-hmm. because they're most likely going to lose in the primary because the way this top two system has worked in California, the only time anyone other than a Republican or a Democrat has been on the general election ballot in any district has been when one of the parties did not run
a candidate. Yeah.
The wow. U.S. Senate election in California last year wasn't a Republican versus a Democrat. It was a Democrat versus a Democrat.
Wow.
Because there were like four Republicans seeking the nomination and they wound up splitting each other's votes.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, political parties in California do not, with the exception of president, do not wind up endorsing candidates to be on the general election ballot.
Let's go back to Larry. Board Op tells me that he is there now. Larry, are you with us?
I am.
All right.
Do you hear me now?
We have you. Go ahead. You're in Utah listening to KYAH. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yesterday, I listened to you. You was talking about Elon Musk and the Hyperloop that he was developing. And it seemed to me like, and I'm not an Elon Musk fan, believe me, but I just read this last week on the internet and saw pictures of the Hyperloop that he's already started in Los Angeles from his one of his home offices, I guess, into an area somewhere around Livermore or San Francisco. He's got the machine. It has already drilled some 1,200 and something feet of open space that they could run the train on, or the Hyperloop machine. And they're not going to have any problem going under cities. You know, most cities, if you've got anything below 75 or 100 feet, that's really unusual as far as the infrastructure goes. Hmm. So if they go 200 or 250 feet and then have deep tunnels and with escalators or elevators in them, whatever, I don't see where they have a problem going into New York City or Philadelphia or any of those other old cities. I think it would be a pretty fantastic idea if it works. I'm not sure it
that,
will.
That's the question of
will
it work.
Is certainly logical.
Okay, so fill me in a little bit here, because this was your show, Daryl, on Thursday night. I heard a little bit of conversation as I was
Elon Musk
in the studio.
Sent out a tweet yesterday claiming that he has a verbal agreement from some government agency somewhere. He didn't specify which one, but claims to have a verbal agreement to be able to move forward with building this thing he's calling a Hyperloop from New York City to D.C. with stops in Baltimore and Philadelphia in between.
Okay, New York to
D.C. Correct.
Got it. Yep.
I heard that myself. I don't know where he's got the authority, what kind of authority he's got, whether it was a janitor in a closet or somebody
right,
in high government. But
whether
he has that or not, I think he has the capability of doing that with what he's got. The boring machine that they had is the same one that they bore through mountains in Switzerland and in Italy.
Huh.
It's the same type they've used. In fact, they had one that was stuck in the mud up in Seattle doing some tunneling.
So the idea is they're gonna tunnel
but
underneath
cities? That's just
cities?
Really crude mechanics. They've had those things around for some time. They've just gotten them better and better and better.
Hmm.
The thing that's interesting is the way they run it with a vacuum and make it go. They ran a test on 1,200 feet, and they did that in 4.3 seconds, and it was just a test without even having the
Just to clarify something here, you're talking about the Hyperloop went that many feet, or are you saying the boring machine went 1,200 feet in 4 seconds?
The boring machine bored a long enough tunnel via this article, and I can only go by what I read and what I saw. They had 1,200 feet of open space that they could run whatever they ran on, and they did it in 4-point-something seconds.
They bored through 1,200 feet of rock or whatever? Or are you saying that they did the Hyperloop in 4 seconds?
They went in a tunnel area that would have had the Hyperloop, so it didn't even have the vacuum in it. They just ran whatever they ran.
So you're talking about the Hyperloop, this device. You're talking about the device.
Hyperloop, whatever they call it.
Right.
And they did that 1,200 feet in 4-point-something seconds.
Okay.
That was from start to stop.
I mean, that's very fast.
You can find that
yes.
on the internet. It's on the internet. This isn't something I'm making up.
Yeah, no, I saw a video of this thing. It's supposedly like magnetic or magnetic propulsion or something.
It uses a magnetic field to drive it, and it has a vacuum that keeps the air friction down. I was an airline pilot for a long time, and air friction's a big deal. It's one of the hardest things to get through when you're flying supersonic.
Interesting.
In fact, as you go through supersonic speed, air is no longer air-like. It becomes more like a hydraulic, like water.
Huh.
And you're pushing it harder and harder. It just makes it almost impossible without tremendous amounts of power.
So he's saying this tube...
You know, up and keeping at a speed that would be what he's talking about.
Yeah, so
but with the vacuum in there, it's like being in outer space.
Wow. That sounds like, that sounds really amazing. Hey, Larry, thanks for calling tonight. I appreciate it. So the idea is he's planning on burrowing under all these cities. That way he doesn't have to, like, get land rights or whatever to dig.
Right. That's part of the question, and it seems as though that's part of why he's doing it, but also this Hyperloop requires, like a vacuum tube, and you can't really do that above ground.
Okay, interesting. Why would you be able to do that below ground if you can't do it above ground?
Because underground, you've got a complete circle. Yeah. On top of ground, you would have to build something over top.
I think you'd still have to build a thing anyway just to make sure it was vacuum sealed. Anyway, more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Whether you want to talk about the Hyperloop or Calexit, those are two of the things we've discussed. You can take control of the airwaves as well and bring up absolutely anything that you want to talk about. With you here tonight, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
And also want to let you know about Dash. It's digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people like you manage your own wealth. It's fast, private, and easy. Fees are low and transactions are fast and can be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone anywhere in the world for just pennies on the dollar anytime. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. And anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. So join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today and find out more at Dash.org. There's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now. So go to Dash.org and find out why. As Ian and Daryl continue here, we've been talking about a lot about secession here tonight on Free Talk Live because, well, we're big fans of the idea. And out in California, there are a couple of different competing movements to encourage secession in a couple of different ways. There's the State of Jefferson folks and the New State .org people who want to see the sort of the northern portion of the state secede into its own state. And then there's the California Freedom Coalition that wants to see California just leave the United States entirely and be its own nation, which, of course, I would much rather see total secession like that happen rather than people just trying to want to be more in another state within the United States. But right. Still, I still support any level of secession from what we currently have. And we were getting into this Calexit comic book, which is interesting because it wasn't, apparently, according to the author, the creators of the comic, it was not actually conceived based out of the secession movement necessarily, as far as the Freedom Coalition or Yes California, those two movements. It was conceived prior to that. They say it was even conceived prior to Trump getting the nomination. So presumably it probably came after the Brexit thing, which happened, I would guess, just before Trump got the nomination. Wasn't that midsummer last year when the Brexit thing happened or sometime during the summer?
I believe it was. I'm pulling up June 23rd. Yeah. So, yeah, last summer.
So, I mean, they're saying here they weren't even sure where the term came from. But I think it's interesting that you have sort of manifesting at the same time different people in the same place having similar ideas, right? So
right.
All these things are happening in the world, and somebody decides to start this movement towards secession of, getting petition signatures and all that out in California. And at around the same time, somebody else, completely non-connected to those people, decides he's going to start, a couple people decide they're going to start working on a comic book about Calexit, about the idea of California seceding. Again,
right,
not...
That's one of the brilliant things about ideas is you see this a lot to where people have very similar ideas at about the same time.
Right. It's to me it says that this is time for this idea, that it's happening so on its own. It's coming out of people just on its own who don't even know one another because
right.
It's an idea that's time has come. That, to me, is more evidence of this being more prescient now than ever before, so, as an issue that we need to discuss now more so than ever. So in an email, this is from LAWeekly.com, the latest independence measure, which aims for the state ballot next year, would give voters options. It would take steps toward independence from the United States, a goal that scholars and the California Legislative Analyst's Office say is not legally possible. Prizzolo, who's one of the authors of the comic, is making one vision of a California nation possible through fiction, although he says his story, which includes the journey of a Mexican immigrant Zora and her compatriot Yamil, is neither a warning against secession or an endorsement. He says the book itself is not a polemic for or against secession. In the story, California is forced to secede when a lot of people are put into a position where they need to take principled stances and conflicts escalate. In the book, the comic book, California becomes split between pro-immigrant sanctuary cities and more conservative inland areas. Los Angeles, San Diego, and the Bay Area are occupied by federal forces, but Zora and Jamil, under the Pacific Coast Sister Cities Alliance, which eventually also includes Tijuana and Vancouver, battle the U.S. government. Quote, we focus on characters who are hopeful, and that's what's driving them to resist and ultimately help one another. Our goal is for the characters to shine through the dystopia. We want the book to be hopeful, optimistic, and constructive. The characters are diverse. Black Mask Studios comics always attempt to be inclusive, he says. But interestingly, authors had to go out of their way to portray background characters as mostly white because immigrants have largely been banished. We were forced to make California look less diverse than it actually is because it's an occupied fascist state with a travel ban in the comic. Will such a dark vision of a California torn from America hurt the prospects of the Calexit initiative? Or could it drum up support because it might be foreshadowing the rightward political direction of the White House? Quote, it's fiction and meant for entertainment, so we're not too worried about it either way, unquote, said the board member of the group behind the initiative, California Freedom Coalition. Marcus Ruiz Evans, who has worked on secession proposals since 2014, said he's impressed because the comic book storyline mirrors real life. He recently left the Freedom Coalition to return to the original group promoting Calexit, which is Yes, California. And this is the guy who was also leaving the country to move to Russia, as I understand it. He said that a Facebook page about Calexit, the comic book, received many more views than the announcement that Yes, California was back. So people want entertainment. They want to see and hear stories that resonate with them. You know, it's one of the reasons why this business, talk radio, is really more of a sideshow than anything else. I mean, the fact is, while talk radio is the number two format on the radio in the United States, you really only have to have like 5% of the audience, you know, overall to be number two. Right. Because there's so many different divisions in the radio formats. There's all these different music formats and so on. You know, in any given market, if you've got a 5-8 share, you're probably the number one or the number two station in that market.
Right.
And that means 5-8% of any of the people listening to the radio at any given moment in time would be listening to your station.
Correct.
Or your show. And so it is worth putting in perspective here. We are a radio show. That is also a libertarian radio show. So we're a niche of a niche.
Yes.
And so we're doing what we can to reach out. But it is important to have these other methods to communicate ideas like secession.
And
so kudos to them for the comments.
The article that I had pulled up from comicbook.com mm-hmm. has a little bit more info on what this super PAC become the government.
This is what the
going
proceeds of the comic go to benefit.
Correct.
Okay.
It says, Become the Government will be an independent, expenditure-only political committee focused on supporting first-time candidates in the 2018 midterm elections. Because it's a super PAC, they cannot coordinate with the campaigns.
Okay.
But, again, they will be doing independent expenditures. So you probably recall back before the presidential primary here in New Hampshire about a year and a half ago, hearing all of these ads talking up one candidate
sure.
or talking down somebody.
Those are the PACs.
And then at the end, it would say, this has been paid for by, you know, fill in the blank, blah, 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 blah. Not associated with any candidate.
Right.
That's kind of what this is going to be, but for the midterm elections.
Okay.
It says the group will select candidates to support, but will not donate directly to them, nor coordinate directly with them. And the not coordinating directly with them is what allows them to be a super PAC. They intend to advocate for candidates who bring fresh new ideas, perspectives, and experience to the position. But again, you've got to wonder, will any of the candidates getting funding from this Become the Government thing actually be on the general election ballot? Just
well,
because in California, yeah. again, they've got this top two system.
Yeah, probably
so
not.
If you're not a Republican and you're not a Democrat,
yeah.
your chances of getting on the general election ballot are incredibly small. And as we know, people generally don't pay attention to primaries.
Yep, that's true. I mean, the Republicans and Democrats have the systems all over the United States, not just California, built to support them and to punish anybody trying from any nonpartisan or third party.
Right, but at least in New Hampshire, you're allowed to petition onto the ballot.
That's
that
true.
Is not allowed in California.
Wow. Well, you know, if you care
if
about
you're
freedom,
not number one or number two in that primary, you're not on the ballot. Write-in votes are prohibited in California.
Fact is, if you care about freedom, you shouldn't be in California. That's the number 49 most free state,
yes.
Which, you know, it's only above New York. And
but it's twice as good as New York,
that's
according
true.
To the ratings.
New York is a horrible place, but, you know, California is pretty bad. And if you care about liberty, you really ought to be moving to New Hampshire and getting active with us here,
yes.
Because we're actually making a difference. And there's actually, you know, we're stopping the government from growing larger in a lot of ways and rolling it back in some other ways. Poker, home poker, just legalized recently here in New Hampshire. We're coming up.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You're invited to join us on the radio here. Toll-free number 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and our Skype username, if you want to join us, is lrn.fm. As always, you can take control of the airwaves and bring up anything that you want, though we've been talking about secession here tonight. And actually, I did actually have a story in my show prep about secession. But it wasn't about the secession we've been discussing. We've been talking about California because one of our callers in the first hour brought it up. Brought up the different secession movements. There's the folks in the northern part of the state that want to secede, and apparently there are now at least two groups in the northern part of the state that want to secede. There's also the California Freedom Coalition as well, and so we got into a lot of that. But that's not the only exciting, interesting secession movement out there. There's also some others. Vermont's got one. New Hampshire's got one. Of course, state of Texas has at least two that I'm aware of, maybe more. And Hawaii, I believe, has one as well.
Not sure if that one's still around.
I bet you there's somebody in Hawaii that wants to secede. What level of organization they have, I don't know. But, you know, in addition, also in the Pacific, Guam, where we are now on the radio unofficially. I still don't have an agreement in writing from the station, but welcome to all of our listeners there in Guam. You know you're there if you're listening to us. We've been on now for, I don't know, a couple months every single day in Guam. So,
woohoo!
So yeah, so we're delayed by a little ways, but that's what happens when it's the future in Guam. Right now, it's the future.
Yes.
In Guam. So anyway, from Guam, this is actually a Japanese news site, the Japan Times. As Guam prepares to celebrate Liberation Day, so this is from, I think, a few days ago. I'm not sure when this came out. It's not actually, oh yeah, here it is, July 16th. So I'm not sure when Liberation Day was or is, but it says here it was that week of July 16th. Political leaders on the Pacific Islands say it's time to decide whether to remain a U.S. colony or become an independent nation. Debate about independence has raged for decades, but legal complications means plans to take the issue to a vote have stalled several times.
Guampedia, which is apparently a thing, says that Liberation Day is celebrated July 21st.
Former senator, that would have been yesterday. It's July 21st for us right now as we're doing
yes.
the show, but right now, if you're in Guam, that was yesterday. And by the time you hear that, this statement in Guam, it may be 2 days ago, if I've got all my time zones correct.
Welcome to the future.
You're
from the past.
Right. Former Senator Eddie Duenas said a self-rule plebiscite was a long, and it's a vote, by the way.
Non-binding.
Non-binding. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Whenever I see it, I think it's like some sort of insect.
It could be an insect, but it's not.
Was long overdue and should be held alongside a gubernatorial election due next year. He said, quote, we have been driving, but we don't know where we're driving to and how far we'll go, unquote. He told a recent meeting of Guam's Decolonization Commission in the capital of Hagatna. We just keep driving, he says, and driving. It's annoying. Guam has been an unincorporated territory of the United States since 1898, meaning its 160,000 inhabitants are U.S. citizens but have limited rights. They cannot, and let's clarify something here. You have rights by virtue of the fact that you're a human being. So I want to make sure that's clear. What they're talking about here is the privileges associated with governance of the United States government.
Correct.
They don't.
And recognition of certain things. So, and, you know, as we mentioned earlier in the show, when discussing Dr. Mary Ruart, we're not fans of minimum wage laws.
Yep.
But some
fans
people.
Of freedom.
Right. But some people would say, oh, well, the people of Guam, they don't even wind up getting the protection of minimum wage. They don't have the right to have a minimum wage. Well, you know, that's the freedom to contract. When you're not forcing people to pay a certain wage,
mm-hmm.
then you're allowing a freedom to contract. There are certain other things. People in Guam that were born and raised there don't pay U.S. income tax, but if we were to move to Guam,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't, you know, by virtue of just living in Guam, wind up not paying income tax unless we became residents of. And there's, you know, all of these weird, tricky sorts of things, and, you know, words have definitions.
Especially in law.
Correct. And I think the biggest thing that the people of Guam and Puerto Rico and some of the other territories, the biggest complaint, or rather the most legitimate of the complaints, is the non-representation in Congress.
Sure. And they also can't participate in U.S. elections, according to this article.
Right.
And they do have a representative, but they don't get to vote on any
legislation. Right. So they are not represented. And that is... And, you know, this is sort of, you know, one of those tricky sorts of things, because Washington, D.C. also doesn't have voting representation in Congress.
That's right. The
but they do pay U.S. income tax because they're a district, not a territory.
Right. Different name, different word.
Right. And, you know, because legal words have legal meanings.
Right.
Residents of territories that are U.S. citizens don't pay income tax because of the no taxation without representation, but yet the people of D.C. who are also not represented wind up having to pay. But let me tell you, people of Guam, taxation with representation, not much better.
Right, and that's actually what their license plate says out of D.C., taxation with representation, does it not?
No, it says taxation without.
Oh, you're right. Taxation without.
Because
thank you. Yep.
They're being taxed without being represented, and that was one of the rallying cries of the U.S. Revolution.
Correct.
You know, the American secession of 1776, the big secession that everybody celebrated just a couple of weeks ago, but they don't use the dirty S word to describe it.
Right. Everybody likes that secession, but when you start talking about...
But if you say the word secession, they're like, I don't know what secession you're talking about. That was independence.
So the United Nations lists Guam as one of only 17 remaining colonies worldwide, a situation Governor Eddie Calvo once remedied. Calvo has long campaigned for a referendum on self-determination that would give voters three options for the future: independence, becoming a U.S. state, or remaining in so-called free association with Washington.
Technically, they're not in free association.
Mm-hmm.
The Federation of Micronesia is in free association.
Huh.
Micronesia is recognized internationally as an independent country. Micronesia is a member of the United Nations, but they are in quote-unquote free association with the United States of America, meaning that...
Does that mean the U.S. handles their passports?
There are certain things. I don't think passports is one of the things, But there are certain things that the U.S. government does for the people of Micronesia, such as we will provide you defense if you allow us to set up a military base here. We will. Ugh. I think the United States Postal Service delivers the mail in Micronesia. So there are a couple of things that wind up being done. But the people of Micronesia, they're not U.S. citizens. They're not U.S. nationals. If they want to immigrate to the United States, then, you know, they might wind up getting bumped a little closer to the front of the line over somebody from, say, Germany, but they're not going to go ahead of somebody from American Samoa. And American Samoa is an even more interesting territory because the people of American Samoa are not citizens of any country. They are U.S. nationals, but they are not U.S. citizens. So if someone from Samoa, American Samoa, and then there's the Republic of Samoa that's an independent country, completely separate. But if someone from American Samoa wants to immigrate to the United States, they go front of the line on getting citizenship. They have a U.S. passport that says U.S. national, not citizen.
We'll continue here in moments about the potential for secession in Guam.
Free all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody else. 855-450-FREE is our toll-free number. 855-450-3733. You can bring up what you want here on Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll free. Join us right here. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. It's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and the Skype username here is lrn.fm. Tonight with you in the studio, it's Ian.
And Daryl.
Also, if you want to help support Free Talk Live, then you can shop with us. Just go to shop.freetalklive.com. Enter Amazon through the links you'll find there. There's shop. You can shop for Canada, U.S., U.K., whatever one of those locations is best for you. You can click on the appropriate one over at shop.freetalklive.com. Get your shopping taken care of and feel good because you're helping Free Talk Live at the same time. Free Talk Live will get a cut of the purchase price. shop.freetalklive.com. As we continue here, you, of course, are invited to bring up anything that you want. We can continue talking about secession for Guam, perhaps, coming up here in moments. But let's go to the phones. And to the fun, we got Doug calling from Chicago, listening online via TuneIn. Hello, Doug.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
I'm pretty much calling about, did you know what happened down in Florida with the group of men that were watching the guy who drowned and they didn't do anything about it?
No, when was this?
Evidently, I think it happened like a week ago. They actually have it all over the web, and they had it on TV, and I heard about it all day today.
Huh.
And the thing can be that PD chief, he went on the record telling all the media, and the Chicago Tribune reported on it too, that they need a law down in Florida to pretty much make you report any type of crime or anybody in trouble. And I found it to be kind of hypocritical for the fact that, okay, you remember what happened a week ago here where a lady actually did report another lady, what she thought had been another lady getting raped out in the alley. And here she ended up dead, shot by the cop. Meaning that in one way they want you to report, you know what I mean? They want you to report crime. They want you to report people in help. But by the way, you're under common law. You're not obligated to do that. I have no accountability for you. You know what I mean? If you're not my kid or, you know. But they want people to take accountability for other people that you don't even know and report if they're in trouble or report a crime. But here, a lady a week ago did report a crime, what she thought had been a crime. She went out in the alley to confront the cop to find out what had been going on, and the cop ended up shooting her dead.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I watch it all the time. It can be like a hypocritical issue with them. I mean, right here in Oak Brook, Illinois today, a lady got charged with leaving her dog in the car, and the dog ended up dying from the heat. But a month ago, a Cook County sheriff did the identical thing. And they never charged them. You know, it can be like we have the law applied to, like, you and me.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We're getting much more totalitarian, much more tyrannical. You know, anything that you do wrong, man, you could end up in jail. I mean, I'm fortunate I've never even had a ticket in my life, let alone be in jail. But anything that you do, you could end up in jail for. While
right.
they get away pretty much with murder. You
yeah,
know?
Sure. And it's you know, what do they call it? Professional privilege or something like that?
Yes.
With the police?
Well, they call it immunity.
Professional
courtesy.
Immunity.
And then
yeah.
the thin blue line.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, it's interesting. I had not heard the story about the drowning, and you're right, Doug. This is disturbing, the idea that one would be obligated to call the police if one sees some sort of thing happening that the police might have an interest in, which is what you're saying the proposal is here. I mean, I understand that in a circumstance where somebody's in trouble, if there's something you can do to help, obviously that's the right thing to do, but
right.
it shouldn't be a criminal punishment if you don't do anything. And that's not
right.
how you get...
Right. That should come down to morality, though. You know what
right.
I mean? You or me would do that. You or me would not only call, I'm sure, knowing you, paying attention to you on the radio for long enough that, you know, you'd probably go in and try to help the guy. I know I would, too. But that can come down to an issue of morality. When we begin getting the government involved in it, okay, well, not only should you call 911, but you should go in there and you should put your own life in jeopardy to try to help the guy. That can be what they pretty much do in Germany and a lot of Europe. You not only have to call, but you're obligated to help the individual.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Pardon me, you know, if I got a family and I got children, I mean, I don't mind helping, but if I'm going to put my life in jeopardy, I'm not going to do that. And which, by the way, that can be a liberty issue. Why am I obligated to help other people out that I don't even have a relationship with? You know, I mean,
right, you shouldn't be obligated. There's a difference between it's
right.
the right thing to do and it's your obligation. Because if you start obligating people to help in these situations, there could be some unintended consequences to that happening.
Right. And
right.
I do know, at least as of a little over a decade ago, when I did have an advanced first aid certification in Pennsylvania at the time, and I don't know if they still do, but at the time they had something that was a duty to, basically an obligation to act thing that only applied to people that were known to have certain
certification.
So if you're a trained EMT and you're in uniform, whether going to work, from work, on the job, and you drove by a medical emergency.
Only if you're in uniform?
Well, otherwise, they're not necessarily going to know, oh, a trained EMT just drove by and mm-hmm. didn't do anything. But if they see you in uniform...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Then you could be charged with, yeah. you were in uniform and did not act.
But they would still... do it. They would still have to be legally required to do it, even if they're not in a uniform, right? It just would be harder to catch them.
I forget the exact wording,
yeah.
But you know, it's one of the reasons that most people that worked in those fields would not wear the uniforms on the way to or from mm-hmm. work, because if you're on your way to work and then you're required by law to stop to assist with something, well,
yeah.
then you wind up being late to work.
Lose your job.
And possibly lose your job. So, you know, once you start, you know, mandating these things, yeah, it does wind up getting very, very tricky of how do you know
right.
whether this person actually
and
has
about,
any kind of certification.
Right.
And then if
well,
it's a thing
I,
of, let's
what
just
if they
say,
make things worse?
Well, right, so there's that.
I find it to be unbelievable, too, for the fact that, okay, well, you can look here in 1 month time frame here, a one-month time frame, and here we had a lady do the identical thing that you have the government wants you to do and that they want to make a law to make you do, and here she ended up killed. You know what I mean?
Right.
She ended up killed by the cop. And if you go into Google and you type in Florida drowning law, it'll come right up. You've had the whole web covering it left and right today. Mm. But I want to bring that up. I couldn't believe it.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for the call tonight, man. I appreciate the heads up on this story.
But where I was going to go is if you see a fight and there's some kind of requirement of you must go protect
that's
somebody.
A problem.
Well, maybe the person that's getting beaten up was the purse snatcher,
mm-hmm.
and now you're helping the purse snatcher be able to get up and run away.
You don't know.
You don't know.
You just came across it. Or what if, you know, in the fight circumstance, you had two people who were consenting to a fight, and instead of having, you know, instead of the requirement to help, they might be having a requirement to just call the police.
Right.
So instead, you see some fight going down, you got to call the police, or else you're going to get arrested if the police find out you're there.
Say something.
And so then the police arrive, they go ahead and they arrest one or both of the parties based on whatever, you know, arbitrary reasons they do that. Well, what if both parties were voluntarily consenting to a fight, and, you know, whether it's them fighting over some girl at a bar or whatever, I mean, you know, you can always try to escape the fight. And if they seem to continue to go at one another, let them do their thing. You know, if you don't have any kind of stake in that, I don't know. I think is really dangerous. What if somebody jumps into the water to try to save the drowning person, but they end up getting pulled under by this person? The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. Or what if they just don't have what it takes to assist in those circumstances? Right. What if they can't swim themselves? We're coming up here. It's Free Talk Live. Ross Ulbricht was convicted in early 2015 of running the infamous Silk Road Underground Market. The Silk Road was a gift to humanity and helped reduce the harms brought on by drug prohibition. For this good deed, Ross has been sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Now, an appeal is Ross's only chance, and he needs your support. Please visit FreeRoss.org, where you can contribute via various methods, including Bitcoin. Visit FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org. It's Free Talk Live. You dial toll-free. If you'd like to join us, you can bring up whatever you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. With you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian.
And Daryl.
And if you've got Skype, you can Skype into the show at Skype username lrn.fm. And also want to let you know about how you can save big time on your purchases at Amazon. You go to saveitpurse.com. And the trick is you have to have Bitcoin or some other kind of cryptocurrency in order to use Save It Purse. Normally, you can easily get, let's say, 15% off, 20% on whatever it is that you're ordering through Amazon. I just recently got more than 30% off of something, however.
Nice.
Because I was very, very patient. I did not really need a new cell phone because I've got the Galaxy S4. But I wanted to get an upgrade, and it turns out the newer S models, the S6 and on, are kind of crippled in a certain way that doesn't really work with Straight Talk, which is the company that I use. They're not an advertiser. They're just, you know, that's who I use for cell phone service. And it turns out the newer phones with the Galaxy series don't have two antennas in them. So unless you have a very special feature that Straight Talk doesn't allow, but Verizon does, you can't actually use the internet at the same time as being on a phone call. So if you're on a phone call with somebody for a business and you need to pull up an email, sorry, you can't do that with the newer models of the phone. I found that out the hard way and ended up selling the S6 that I had to Mark. So I was like, yeah, I don't really need a new phone, but if I could get one at 33% off, then I'd still want to get it, especially if that brought the price of a brand new Galaxy S5 below $100, which is, or not brand new, but refurbished is the one I got. And so, yeah, I got one for you know, under $100 when the real, you know, the regular price is like $130 or something like that on Amazon. And that's how it works. You just add whatever product you want to an Amazon wish list. You import that at saveitpurse.com. You just copy the URL and you put it in at saveitpurse.com. They give you a little slider, and you can slide that sucker all the way to the maximum. It's probably going to take forever for somebody to buy it at that level, but every now and then it'll happen. And it took, I don't know, several weeks for it to happen for me, maybe 4 or 5 weeks or something like that. But it worked. And now there's a, you know, brand new phone that, it's new to me, but it's refurbed. But I've always had good luck with refurbished models. So you can save big, big money over at saveitpurse.com. I do it almost every time I buy from Amazon, because why wouldn't you want to save 15, 20, 25% or even more on the stuff that you need for life? So go to saveatpurse.com. As we go to Sarah in Albuquerque, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Sarah.
Well, they want to talk about increasing the talking on cell phone and texting while driving, but
increasing the fine.
They want to increase the fine, but they already they want to increase the fine because you know what it is? It's $25 for our state. Now each city could I think in Santa Fe it's like I don't know, maybe $300 in their city limit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it is in Albuquerque. I think it was $25 the last time. But you know what I'm saying? If I look at a driver, every other one is either texting, looking down at the lap, or they got a cell phone stuck to their head. Every other
driver. So what
driver
do you think they should?
Like
what do you think they should increase the fine to?
Death.
Well, you know the thing. How about like I would love it to be like at least $150 here in Albuquerque.
All right, now Daryl, isn't it like $125 in New Hampshire or something like that, or $70 or $80 or something? I know it's like more than $25 here.
I'm not sure. It's probably in the $100 range.
Yeah. I feel like it is in the $100 range, and I can tell you, Sarah, that it doesn't. You know, I see the same thing that you do. I have a Daryl. You and I, we sit in front of this window here in this studio during the daytime. And there's people who are constantly coming to this stop sign out here. And they're all, I mean, I'm not going to say it's every other one, but it's a lot of them that have a cell phone in their hand and are looking at it, doing who knows what while they're driving. I mean, that is a common sight here.
Right.
And my point is, the fine here is definitely higher than $25. So I don't think that increasing the fine dramatically is going to drop off dramatically the number of people who use their smartphones while driving.
Well, if you set the penalty to death, then that will decrease the number.
Okay.
Not drastically, but it will decrease the number, and then you'll just find yourself with, you know, an overcrowded death row of people sitting on death row for 15, 20 years waiting to be executed for using a cell phone.
Yeah, but more people are going to be killed because people are talking on their cell phone.
Actually, Sarah, if you look at statistics, you'll see that there's upticks in the number of accidents after the laws go into effect.
Really?
Saying that it's illegal to use a cell phone while driving. Because what you just described, Ian, instead of people holding the cell phone at the top of the steering wheel and still being able to see the road, they're holding the cell phone down by their crotch.
They sure are. I see
and
it.
They're looking down, and their eyes are completely off
Far
the road.
Far more dangerous. I mean, they're both dangerous, but one is clearly more dangerous than another. And I did just check, Daryl. It is a $100 fine, according to a story from WMUR. And so, yeah, Sarah, I mean, there, you got four times the level of the fine here, and I still see this all day long.
Here's something else. New Hampshire does not require adults to wear a seatbelt.
That's true.
But based on studies that I've seen, New Hampshire has a higher percentage of adults that wear seatbelts than the neighboring states where it's required.
Isn't that interesting? Sarah, what do you think?
So, but here's the thing is that if they have a law, see, they tried to pass this like 2-3 years ago here. They talked about it, and it just bombed out. So it's resurrected again. So there's a lot of people that want to push for this because a lot of people have been killed and hurt, again, by people talking on texting. Why would they bring it up unless a lot of people were hurt and killed?
No, they bring stuff up.
It's revenue.
Hold on, Sarah.
Revenue.
They bring things up. Not only revenue, but you have, you know, petty little tyrants that want to control other people's lives that wind up getting elected as state representatives and state senators. That's why they bring stuff up.
Yeah.
They don't care about your safety. They care about controlling you.
So true. Thanks for the call, Sarah. Toll-free number here tonight. If you want to join us, 855-450-FREE like freedom, 855-450-3733. And even if, let's say, 10%, let's say right now, you know, in Albuquerque or New Mexico, it's $25 per texting ticket. If they quadruple that to $100, as they have it here in New Hampshire, quadruple the rate, that is not going to reduce by four times the number of people who text while drive. It might reduce it by some amount, let's say 10%, but they will more than triple the amount of revenue that they get in by doing something like that.
Right.
So it's all about the revenue. They just want to write tickets to people and have an excuse to pull people over and then possibly use more excuses to search their cars and so on.
And chances are, if they're pulling you over because, oh, looked like you were using your cell phone, they're also going to say you were driving, maybe not recklessly, but, you know, some other
Distracted
driving. You were driving in an unsafe manner. You were this, you were that. And they're just going to charge stack. They'll charge you with multiple things and then wind up basically, you know, pressuring you into taking a plea to where you wind up giving them more money than you would have given if you only wound up getting charged with one thing.
So let's get back into the discussion about secession, because Guam, there's some talk about a plebiscite, a non-binding referendum vote that the people of Guam will, you know, be heard finally on this issue of should they remain as the current status that they have with Washington, D.C., where there's limitations on the amount of representation they have, meaning not really any, or should they have independence as their own country? Or should they try for statehood? Should they become a U.S. state? All the options have their advocates, according to Japan Times. And the governor of Guam says whatever the outcome, at least voters would have a say in their future. He says anything's better than the status quo. I'd be happier if we became a state, but if voters choose independence or free association, I'd be happier than I am right now. Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. More about potential secession for Guam, which I think would be wonderful. 855-450-3733.
Plus, who gets to vote in that election?
Good question. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll free. Take control of the airwaves here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. Like freedom, 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and the Skype username here is lrn.fm. With you tonight, you've got Ian.
And Daryl.
As we continue here discussing secession, perhaps Guam is going to be next on the Gwexit, perhaps? Gexit?
No.
Well, anyway, they want to have a vote there in Guam. The governor is actually behind the idea. He says that he wants the Guam to become a U.S. state, but he would still be happier even if any of the other choices were selected, including secession from the U.S., simply because he says he wants people to be able to weigh in on the question. The news story coming from Japan Times. Now, you had said you had something relevant to the discussion.
Yeah, right? On who winds up actually getting to vote
in this plebiscite.
And I remember seeing this a few months ago, and I've had it stored in my show prep folder.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from Ballot Access News, where there was actually a lawsuit over who gets to vote. Guam has a law that says that Guam residents who became citizens by a particular act of Congress in 1950 and the descendants of those individuals are entitled to register to vote in any future plebiscite on the future political status of Guam.
Okay.
This special list of registered voters is separate from the regular list of voters.
Meaning that if you or I were there, we would not qualify for this vote.
Correct.
Okay.
But somebody challenged that. The law also says that no such plebiscite will be held until a large percentage of eligible residents actually register for the election.
Hmm.
So there's the registered voter list of here's all the residents of Guam that are eligible to vote in Guam elections. And then there's a special list of here's eligible Guam residents that either became citizens by this act of Congress in 1950 or the descendants of those residents from 1950.
Okay.
A resident of Guam who does not meet the special qualifications filed a lawsuit in 2011 seeking to invalidate the special registration list. The government of Guam tried to defend the law by saying the lawsuit isn't ripe because the proportion of eligible voters who have actually signed up for the special list is far too low, and therefore any future election on the future of the status of Guam is far off. The U.S. District Court initially agreed with the Guam government, but then the Ninth Circuit ruled that the case is ripe and sent it back. On March 8th, the U.S. District Court struck down the law setting up the special registration list.
Man.
The case is Davis v. Guami. Election Commission, the basis for the decision is the 15th Amendment, which does not permit any voting restriction based on ethnicity or race.
Because you would think it would make sense for only Guam people to be able to vote, or Guam descendants to be able to vote in this, because then otherwise you get a bunch of military people, right? Because isn't there a military base out there?
There is a military base out there.
And they're going to vote for the U.S. government. Presumably.
Presumably, if they otherwise qualify to vote in Guam. And then right. The question is, will they wind up registering to vote in Guam so that they can vote to become a state, which is what happened in Hawaii, where they said everybody that's lived in Hawaii for at least a year gets to vote, unless you still support the existence of the Kingdom of Hawaii, in which case you're ineligible. So the only people that wound up getting to vote on statehood in Hawaii were basically the military, their families, and people in Hawaii that did not support the kingdom. The article continues, approximately 99% of Guam residents who gained citizenship by a special act of Congress in 1950 were native Comoros, and under the law, that limits the registration basically to their descendants, which is an ethnic test, which is in violation of the U.S. Constitution.
But still, it's the supermajority of the island, is what they're saying. 99%.
Well, that's of the people that gained citizenship based on the law in 1950.
Yeah.
They don't specify what the ethnic makeup is today.
Okay.
And again, you did mention there is that military base. But the people living on the military base are not necessarily residents of Guam.
Right. They could be residents of Alabama or wherever it is they came from.
Correct.
And could still be voting absentee there.
Right. So the question is, would they wind up...
Maybe they wouldn't switch over.
But if the question is, you get to vote on statehood if you want, then it would... kind of makes sense. If you want there to be additional states, it would make sense for you to then become a Guam resident to vote for
statehood. But what portion of them would? That's the question. What portion of the military people would, and what portion of the island do they represent anyway? I don't know offhand, but a little more background here on Guam. The story from Japan Times, the independence question is complicated by Guam's long and complex relationship with the United States. Since becoming Washington's colony in the wake of the Spanish-American War, it endured brutal Japanese occupation during World War II and was recaptured by U.S. Marines after a bloody month-long battle on July 21st in 1944, a date celebrated as Liberation Day on the island. It still hosts one of the largest U.S. military contingents in the Asia-Pacific, often referred to as America's tip of the spear, in a region where tensions with China, North Korea, and Russia are all too common. In addition, many in Guam are heavily dependent on U.S. welfare, with about 44,900 individuals and 15,650 households. Remember, there's only 160,000 inhabitants, so 44,900, I mean, you're basically talking about a third of the island is on U.S. welfare. They're receiving food stamps and public health care benefits. Federal grants and taxes on U.S. service personnel in Guam also play a large role in meeting the island's budget and infrastructure needs. Maritis Schwab, a resident of Agana Heights Village, said she was concerned about whether Guam was politically mature enough to govern itself if it became a state. She asked, quote, "What would they do in terms of continuing the services currently provided by the federal government? What are the concrete plans going forward? I need to see something practical, and we can attain that by becoming a state." Unquote. Adrian Cruz, an advocate for maintaining free association, said dependency on U.S. funds made changing the status quo a difficult proposition. He says the U.S. has got us into a Goldilocks zone where we don't get too poor to revolt, but we're not too prosperous that we don't need them anymore, he said. The debate is academic anyhow, at least in the short term, after the U.S. federal court in March struck down plans to hold a self-rule plebiscite. It ruled that limiting the vote to the indigenous Comoro population, which numbers about 65,000 in the multi-ethnic territory, so there you go, so about 100,000 people not Comoro and 65,000 are, was race-based and therefore unconstitutional, and that was what you were just talking about.
Correct, and according to the Wikipedia's About 26% of the population of Guam is Filipino, 7% Caucasian, 9% multi-ethnic, and the rest from various backgrounds.
The decision is under appeal, and the government has asked the United Nations to take up its cause. Michael Bebacqua, a Comoro culture expert at the University of Guam, said indigenous people should have a vote on their future after being denied basic rights under generations of colonial rule. He says, quote, "A process of decolonization that must follow the rules of the colonizer is not decolonization. It is an extension of colonization." So, good on Guam. Glad to hear that you guys out there, and we are on the radio in Guam unofficially, are interested in this topic. Would love to hear from some of you. If you tonight you're not going to be able to call live because, number one, you're not hearing the show live. If you're listening in Guam, we do the show at 7 to 10 p.m. at night Eastern time. You're going to have to do the math on what that translates to over in Guam, because it changes based on the Eastern time zone going in or out of daylight savings time. So it's super
daylight saving
time. It's super confusing as to what time it is at any point in the year,
right,
in Guam.
And just pulled up
for me, not for the
people
in Guam.
There's somewhere between 6,000 and 11,000 members of the U.S. military. They're are in the process of moving 5,000 Marines from Okinawa to
Guam. Okay.
So that's going to increase it to 11,000 once all of those are moved. And
so you add them to the welfare recipients, and you've got a pretty big voting block for the federal government.
Apparently, 28% of Guam is occupied by the United States military.
Wow.
As far as the land
mass. Huge chunk of the island.
Yes.
All right, so that's it for tonight. And again, if you're in Guam and you want to talk about secession, on whatever side of the issue that you're on, we would love to hear from you, so don't hesitate to reach out to us. Probably easiest to do it on Skype at Skype username lrn.fm. You can do it any night of the week in Eastern time. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow. Online in the meantime, freetalklive.com. Check out darylfpp.cc. Is spreading the message of liberty, cryptocurrency, and peace around the globe worth $2 per month to you? As you may already know, in addition to our internet feed, LRN.FM broadcasts on free-to-air satellite across North and Central America, as well as Sub-Saharan Africa. And we've been available on satellite for free 24/7 since 2010. The LRN.FM free-to-air satellite signal is reaching some of the most oppressive regimes in the world, and there's no doubt our ideas are making an impact. You can learn more about the channel's impact by watching the 3-minute video at fund.lrn.fm. If you'd like to help free minds globally with our ideas of liberty, cryptocurrency, and peace, you can donate as little as $2 per month via fund.lrn.fm. You can help us continue and expand our satellite broadcast to multiple continents. Visit fund.lrn.fm today, and thank you for your help. Don't forget to share the link on social media. That's fund.lrn.fm.